Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Speaking of minor movie roles, did you know Rita Moreno's in Singing in the Rain?
Where's she in Singing in the Rain?
She plays Zelda, who I think has like two lines.
Oh, yeah. Evil Zelda.
Evil Zelda.
Evil Zelda.
That's Rita Moreno.
There you go. Everyone, were you in it?
I was. I was in Singing in the Rain. I played the plant that Lena Lamont can't make love to.
Ah, I played the dummy that Donald O'Connor dances with and make him laugh.
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour. I am Tommy.
I am Jimmy.
And we are your weekly podcast with show tunes and spirits.
Aww.
what are you drinking today, Jimmy?
Well, today, seeing as I am Scottish, and I don't know if anyone knows that yet, so I am drinking Iron Brew.
Ooh. Mm. I've got a, what is this? An extrovert American IPA, because I'm American.
You are. But you're drinking an India Pale Ale? Mixed signals, Tommy.
From America.
That's true. It's an American Indian Pale Ale. But nothing to do with American Indians.
Exactly. Our quiz question from last time was very well thought out.
Yeah.
It's probably our best.
I think so. It definitely took us the longest, but for maybe different reasons.
In case you missed it was what musical's title song's first lyric goes like this when poorly translated. Quote, condone violence in the cloud from any location monitoring.
Surely that's a Stephen Sondheim or something.
No, Jimmy.
With that caliber of rhyme.
No, it's Singing in the Rain.
Oh, Singing in the Rain. I love that show.
When did you first see this show? This movie, I guess.
Probably later than I should. It was two of my best friends, Casey and Martin, who are now wed. Oh, it's Martin's favorite of all time.
Yeah.
And they showed me it in, what, let's say like 2009, 2008?
Holy crap.
I know, that's late, isn't it?
I mean, I think I saw this movie when I was 5.
Wow.
Yeah, this might be one of my earliest musicals I ever witnessed and took part of.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
And were you like instantly hooked?
I mean, yes and no. I have a love-hate relationship with Singing in the Rain. Mostly love.
Okay.
Mostly love. I mean, would you call this the greatest movie musical?
I'd say it's up there. I really, yeah. really would.
I mean, it literally tops the lists, like AFI's 100 greatest musicals and things like that.
Yeah.
It's number one.
I think of its time, and by that I don't mean like, oh, it was only good then.
Right.
But I mean of that era of movie musicals, the MGM musicals. I think it is the best.
It's certainly the most iconic.
Easily. And everyone knows Singing in the Rain.
Everyone
I literally think
knows Singing
every
in the
single
Rain.
Person
yeah.
knows that.
For the two people out there who feel really lonely and who haven't seen Singing in the Rain, what is this show about?
The basic premise is it takes place in a time when silent movies were going out, and the talkies, as they're called, this new revolutionary picture idea. And they're taking the movie industry by storm.
This is a demonstration of a talking picture. Notice, it is a picture of me and I am talking.
And we have kind of a massive famous actor called Don Lockwood, played by Gene Kelly, who basically discovers this beautiful kind of ingenue, wonderful dancer called Kathy Seldon, who's been kind of doing the vaudeville circuit, but wants to be a proper actress. So he kind of takes her under his wing and nurtures her whilst trying to combat with all of these new talking pictures alongside his fellow leading lady, Lena Lamont.
Lena Lamont, who has the unfortunate affliction of an awful voice, Which, the worst as an actress in the early talkie movie age, is not a good thing.
It's not good, exactly. And then alongside them, we've got Donald O'Connor, just making us all happy.
And Donald O'Connor is there too.
Yeah, pretty much.
Second banana, best friend. And yeah. maybe we'll talk more about him later. I have some theories about Cosmo Brown.
Ooh, what could they be?
Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, bum, bum.
So this movie musical is based on reality in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. I would say. Which is interesting for a musical comedy.
Yeah, definitely. Because especially of that era, it was all kind of, not fantasy, like we're not talking in space, but it was like hyper-romantic or... You know, it's happening over in the cornfields or
right.
the sea or wherever.
Right.
Whereas this is just, you know, L.A.
Yeah, it's L.A. It's Hollywood in the 20s. They talk about the jazz singer and other, you know, talkies of the time.
Yep.
There's a whole montage with, like, actual references to actual early 20s and 30s and 40s movies.
Watching it. I actually learned a lot, which I never expect to do from early music comedies. Yeah, because I don't really know, you know, the transition and mm-hmm. or just how, I guess, what it took to be a silent film actor as opposed to a non-silent, a talking film actor.
Yeah.
And you never really think, like, oh, there is a huge distinct difference there.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because, you know, people like Lena Lamont. She'd be out of a job.
It's very inside Hollywood in a lot of ways. Mm. You know, it's definitely elevated. And there is certainly some suspension of disbelief mm-hmm. in the same way that, like, you know, who can sit down at a piano and just write out a song? But I think one of the things that attracted me a lot to it at a very young age and, like, why it fits in my canon very well is a lot of it's about technical theater, too.
Yeah.
Like, figuring out the technology of the talkie and, like, how... You know, the whole hiding the microphone scene and, like,
that is an amazing scene.
It's so funny.
You're right. Like, it makes you realize that, hey, there's all of this backstage work going on.
Yeah, man. Comden and Green's screenplay for this thing is really funny.
It's genuinely funny. It's not like, oh, again, funny for the time.
Right.
But it is, like, it is nowadays, funny today. It's still really funny. Like, their characters. Yeah. They're great.
And just the number of one-liners. Like, there's one point where when Cosmo and Don find Kathy again, and she previously, you know, last time they met her, she burst out of a cake, and Cosmo says,
"Gee, I'm glad you turned up. We've been looking inside every cake in town."
Yeah!
It's great!
Well done, Comden and Green.
We should talk about the Freed Unit. So this is a classic movie from Arthur Freed's, what, studio unit at MGM?
I think he came on, he started off as, like, not from the bottom, but, like, middling, and then just ended up just taking over. And I think he was just, he became the, like, chief studio exec. It was still MGM, but the Freed Unit was... his posse.
They produced a bunch of movie musicals you heard about. Like, he was an associate producer on The Wizard of Oz. Out of his unit came Gigi and On the Town and An American in Paris and Meet Me in St. Louis. Like,
yeah,
all sorts of those classic movie musicals. And then Singing in the Rain, the classic movie musical.
Yeah, and they're all, like, I think from that list as well, they're such high quality. I think that's what's really noticeable. Like, I could still watch each of those today and love them. And that's very impressive.
Did you know, Jimmy, it is all of Arthur Freed's music in Singing in the Rain?
I did know that. Shocker. But yeah, these songs weren't written for Singing in the Rain. It wasn't like, oh, I've got this great idea about the transition between silent films into talking films. I'm going to go write all this music. All the music was there.
It was Freed and... Who was the other guy?
Nacio Herb Brown?
Household name.
Yeah, one of my faves. Good old NHB. I assume it's like Ignacio. Okay, well, apologies
out there.
Yeah,
but so it's all their songs, and
yeah,
they threw them together. They asked Comden and Green to, like, write a show around those songs.
Which I think, if you think of the songs, you know, well done, Compton and Green.
Yeah, they did a fabulous job.
There's nothing linking them. Do you know what I mean?
Would you qualify this as a jukebox musical? I refer to this as a jukebox musical from time to time.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say in a sense, yes, because it's obviously come from a collection of songs by one artist that haven't been written for the show. Mm-hmm. But I would say that it's not in the form of jukebox musical that we know at the moment, where it's like taking popular songs, do you know what I mean? Like popularized songs and sticking them in. So I would be reluctant to call it a jukebox musical.
I think
as well, because at that period of time, you know what I mean? You had people like Cora Porter, you had people like the Gershwins, who were doing the exact same thing. And I don't think you'd ever call them a jukebox musical.
That's true. Maybe it's even, I wonder comparatively, perhaps, because like a lot of the songs are very well incorporated in the plot, like Good Morning.
Yeah.
I would say almost every song except like Beautiful Girl and the songs in the montages have some kind of plot serving. Oh, and the Broadway rhythm, which we'll get to.
Well, we'll get to that.
But most of the rest of them are well incorporated into the text and seem useful.
And they do. They all make sense. They absolutely all make sense. As the title of show fam say, a shout out to Comden and Green.
Shout out to Comden and Green. They've written so many wonderful things.
They've just written all of the best things.
Peter Pan, On the 20th Century, Bells Are Ringing, On the Town.
On the Town. You have to give a master check because, again, the book for On the Town is so good. I love On the Town. Anyway, we're not talking about On the Town. And Applause, which is getting
applause
nowadays in its revival.
Oh,
so,
it's fabulous.
Yeah, they're a talented pair. And what, isn't it just nice that they're just two friends, two platonic friends?
Yeah. The story goes, I've been wading through the IMDb trivia for Singing in the Rain and a bunch of other locations. And I think more than any other movie, I have found like, you know, you find those facts where you're like, I don't think that's real. I think someone made that up at some point, and now we've decided that's trivia.
Okay.
I have found more of those facts for Singing in the Rain than I think I have for any other thing I've ever researched.
I wonder why that is. Do you think it's just because it is so notorious?
It's so popular. It's so notorious. People like to talk about it a lot. I mean, one of the ones that I read that I believe was that Comden and Green moved into a almost foreclosed silent movie star's mansion to write the screenplay. And that, like, the old silent movie star had lost their job because they didn't have a good voice. And it helped them get in the mood of the era.
So did they, like, discover secret diaries by the silent movie star writing about how they speak in a very, very broad Jersey accent or whatever? I don't know.
Well, I can imagine Comden and Green sitting around their dining room table eating their milk and sandwiches at 1 a.m. and thinking, like, how are we going to get Good Morning into this picture? Wait, I've got it. And then, you know,
they check the time. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And they were great tap dancers.
Yeah.
That may or may not be true.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've talked the whole night through.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Good morning. Good morning. It's great to stay up late. Good morning to you.
When the band began to play, the stars were shining bright.
Now the milkman's on his way, it's too late to say goodnight.
So good morning.
Trivia fact that I have seen confirmed on several occasions, and that very much colors my opinion of this movie, is Gene Kelly's treatment of Debbie Reynolds.
I'm kind of in it. I don't mind.
Really? Well, I think he's such a sleazebag.
Well, no, he wasn't like sexual with her. Is
no,
that what you're talking
no,
about?
No, he was just mean.
Yeah, he was mean, but he was mean to anyone who wasn't good. And I think his feelings, the way I like to think about it is that he was mean because he knew how good she was. Like, he wouldn't have let her in the show, in the film.
He was a co-director, right?
Yeah, exactly. And maybe even, like, an exec, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't have let her in if she couldn't pull up the goods. Do you know what I mean? But you just hate it.
I really struggle with directorial abuse of actors. I really struggle with that. And even I struggle with it when like directors will justify it by saying, well, you're supposed to feel hurt in this scene or you're supposed to be sad. But this is effing Singing in the Rain. Like, yeah, exactly. You know, happy exactly. tap dance, smile. They're supposed to be in love. And the director is out there telling you that your tap dance isn't good enough. And, you know, you're crying under a piano. So the story goes.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I direct, I'm not like that. I'm lovely. I'm really, really lovely. But it got the goods.
That's true.
Although I did hear that she had to have a meeting with Fred Astaire.
That is the other trivia, is that Fred Astaire found her crying under a piano.
Under a table. I heard table, but yeah, piano. See? We'll go with
See?
That.
See? These are all, yeah. Who knows?
But apparently he was equally drilling, and he was just like, no, this is just the way it is. And admittedly, that is kind of true. When you're tap dancing, it's not easy.
Well, and that's even just how the studio culture was in the 40s and 50s. Very rigorous. You have to churn out these movies so fast. And, you know, you have to do it right.
And I don't doubt that there's some element of misogyny in there.
Oh, I'm sure there's a large element of misogyny in there. It is the 50s, Hollywood or not.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't agree with that, but I don't care. I'm in love with Gene Kelly, so.
Debbie Reynolds called this one of the two most difficult things she's ever done.
Yeah.
You know what the other was? You know what the other was?
Childbirth.
Childbirth.
Well, tap dancing and childbirth, what more do you want in life, right?
And, you know, for what it's worth, the child was Carrie Fisher, so.
Yeah. Have you seen, like, Things of Carrie Fisher Now?
Have I seen Things of Carrie Fisher Now?
Yeah, like, as her, in, like, interviews or things like that.
Like, her in Star Wars? I saw her in Star Wars.
Yeah, but did you see, like, interviews with her?
No, why?
She's crazy. She's gone.
She is crazy. She's so crazy. She's come back down, though. She's always, the dog she always carries with her is her therapy dog.
Well, that's it. Like, but she's crazy in a great, I'm not saying, like, oh my god, I'm terrified of Carrie Fisher. Like, her interviews are golden because of how, I don't know, she's just living in another world. It's hilarious. It's really good fun.
I gotta watch some Carrie Fisher interviews.
Yeah, exactly. I'll send you some good ones. Send you some good ones in particular. Some faves. But they're always a treat.
Life was a song. You came along. I've laid awake the whole night through. If I but dared think you cared, this is what I'd say to you. You were meant for me, and I was meant for you.
So yeah, he wasn't the nicest, and I think that's something that you hear about him all the time, because even with, you know, his relationship with Fred Astaire, you know, obviously they had literally virtually the same career and were direct rivals, I guess, and they just didn't get on. But, you know,
it takes all types.
Exactly. And he's still really beautiful.
That's why I like Fred Astaire more.
And we will agree to disagree. Do you think Fred Astaire is beautiful?
I think Fred Astaire is classy.
Okay.
I think
Gene Kelly is sexy.
I don't think Gene Kelly's sexy.
No, he is.
No.
Oh,
no. Have you been reconvinced about his sex appeal after seeing the HD revisions of Singing in the Rain?
Let me break this down. Okay. So I have like an old DVD of it, which is old. So it didn't look good. And I was like, okay, I'm going to. So I went on iTunes and I downloaded it all very legally, which is good. I've got the receipts.
Good for you. Claps for you.
And it was in HD and I couldn't really believe it. I was like, oh my God, they've remastered Singing in the Rain. How great.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off so well. And then like the first thing you see is this massive close-up of Gene Kelly. And the eyeliner and eyeshadow is on fleek, I think the kids say. He is ready to hit the runway on the next season of RuPaul's Drag Race, season 9, starring Gene Kelly. Like, it's very well done. But I was like, That I've never noticed that before, and you wouldn't ever notice
until
your potato filter cameras. But now we're in the land of HD, and I'm like, God,
man.
And I did. I'm not gonna lie, it did halt my sexiness feeling of Dean Kelly. But it's fine because I just went on YouTube and everything was blurry again, and all was well.
You just squint when you watch movies now. That's
exactly
the key.
Exactly. But Debbie Reynolds looked great.
Oh, isn't she 18 when this movie happened?
I think she's very young.
Something like that.
She's so beautiful.
Beautiful girl, you're a lovely picture. Beautiful girl, you're a gorgeous mixture of all that lies under the big blue sky. My heart cries, beautiful girl, you're a dazzling eyeful. Beautiful girl, I could never trifle if I had you. You'd be my dream come true.
Do you want to... Let's talk about the choreography.
Let's do it. Okay.
Because that, I think more than anything, this movie shines for its choreography.
Do you mean in particular to this movie? Or do you mean this movie's choreography shines brighter than
I think the element in this movie that shines the most, maybe above the screenplay, is its choreography.
Yeah, okay.
It is definitely the most iconic parts of this movie are related to its choreography.
To dance. Yeah, I would agree. First of all, let's just get this out. Uh-huh. I need another tap movie.
Yeah.
Like, I miss it. I miss tap so much.
Oh, man.
I don't even know. It fills me with glee and joy and excitement.
It's so incredible. I only have a casual passing knowledge with tap, but I was watching it more particularly this last watch through, and I noticed, like, mm-hmm. in Good Morning, there's a part where they're about to walk up the stairs, and they do, like, a quick little side time step before they start walking. It takes, like, a half of a second, but it's, like, 7 or 8 taps, and it's so fast and so unnecessary. Their backs are turned to you. Like, it is not the focus of the moment, but like just those little flourishes in this movie, it makes the whole thing.
Yeah, like that is it. Like the tiniest little flap will just add that extra beat of joy into your brain. It's so good. It's so good. And I think what I love as well is obviously one of the first ones that you see, Fit as a Fiddle.
Yeah.
That blows my mind when they do like the little cross foot
square dance sort
of opposite ends of the stage. Whilst playing a fiddle,
you're like,
I'm sure they're not playing it live.
How are you moving? How are you not tripping over yourself? Like,
right,
holy cow,
and just so impressive. Moses Supposes, like, Moses, I can't hear Moses Supposes without hearing the tap rhythm in my head. And remind me to get into that later about cast recordings.
That's one of the things I notice with these cast recordings. I enjoy the movie one will dub in the taps back in, but some of the Broadway one or the other West End performances have no tap sound in it, and it just sounds empty. It's like music written
for tap. It infuriates
me. Yeah.
Exactly. It infuriates me. I'm like, it's not hard to do.
No.
You literally just stick a mic near the floor.
Exactly.
Like, it sounds great. It absolutely infuriates me because these songs are kind of nothing without the tap. The dance break has been scored with tap in mind. And you're right, it sounds so empty because you've lost this huge, vital, percussive element. And I don't know why. I think, what is it, the Broadway? The original Broadway?
There's a bunch of... The cast recording landscape of this show is difficult to untangle. There's a bunch of studio recordings, there's a bunch of overseas productions that, like, don't qualify themselves well. My recommendation to people would be, don't listen to anything but the movie version, except for maybe a couple key songs that were added to the stage productions.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're
exactly,
not,
but just
they're not worth listening to in their entirety.
Not at all. The movie is, it made it.
It's iconic.
Roses, 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 when Moses supposes, supposes, couldn't be a lily or a taffy, daffy, dilly. It's gotta be a rose, cause it rhymes with Moses.
guess we should probably say that we're going to refer a lot to the movie this time as opposed to the Broadway show, because
I mean
it's better.
It was a movie musical long before it was ever a stage musical.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those weird backwards interpretations of, I don't think a lot of musicals take this journey. And I think that speaks to how popular this movie musical was. I don't think a lot of other movie musicals have such, at least as successful stage adaptations.
Well, I mean, the only one that I can think of is like American in Paris recently.
Yeah, American in Paris. I mean, Wizard of Oz, kind of.
But even then, it's not
even
good.
Then, yeah. No, and like the stage versions of Singing in the Rain do their very best to just try and recreate the movie on stage.
I mean, literally, scene for scene.
Yeah, exactly.
scene for scene.
A couple songs here and there to cover transitions, but that's it. The songs to listen to, by the way, to wrap that tie up, they give Lena a couple songs in the stage versions.
Yeah.
That are, you know, it's weird to hear her sing. I think it's interesting to listen to him. She has one that's called What's Wrong With Me, which is certainly very funny.
But also just really difficult to listen to. And I mean that in a physical way.
Yeah.
Like, it goes beyond Adelaide. Like, it's Lena Lamont. You know what I mean? She does not let up and it's painful. But I suppose that's what it should be, you know? It's not one you're going to stick on in the background to chill out and listen to a gas recording. But I'm sure in the moment of the show, it's very funny. Shall we talk about Broadway Rhythm?
Oh my god. You gotta just tell me straight out. Do you like this number?
No.
Okay, good.
No. The first time I saw the movie, I don't know whether I like went to the toilet or something. Uh-huh. And I came back and we're in the middle of this. So I was like, What happened?
So I was like, I knew it was coming, I timed like the introductory scene to get into this, because they're watching rushes of the dubs. They're like watching Debbie Reynolds' voice under Lena, and then Don is like, we're gonna put we gotta throw a modern number into the picture. He's a hoofer going to Broadway, and it's like a 45-second scene to like introduce, hey, by the way, this thing's about to happen, and then all of a sudden it's Gene Kelly singing at the camera in like a Technicolor vomit of dance.
And for about like, it feels like half an hour. I mean, it's not. It must be about 10 minutes though, at least 15.
It bothers me so much, Jimmy.
Yeah, completely. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with the movie.
No.
It doesn't have anything to do with the in-movie.
Mm-mm.
You never see it referenced or anything again.
No.
It's literally just a chance for Gene Kelly and that one sexy lady to show off.
Sid Charisse, she is the best part of that number, and don't call her that one sexy lady.
Wait, it's not Sid Charisse, is it?
It's Sid Charisse. That's Sid Charisse.
Is that actually?
Yeah.
I hadn't realized that.
That one sexy lady.
I just thought it was like token brunette.
Sid Charisse.
That's good. That makes me a bit happier.
She's the best part of that number. Like, if it's
she really is. She's,
if it's an excuse to get Sid Charisse involved in the show.
Yeah.
Fine.
Wow.
Yep, that's her. Am I blowing your mind now?
Yeah, I'll need to rewatch it with closer watching, as opposed to just to be like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And just every now and then just singing, gotta dance. And then this weird Broadway rhythm.
Oh, man.
Like, what is that?
The like chorus choreography with like the shoulders and the jazz hands.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at them, they all know how stupid it is.
Yeah. It's so, but I'm just, Gene Kelly must just have been like, listen, you guys, everyone else is doing really well in this movie. I need a moment where it's just me.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like, you know, I know I just had a solo dance number like a couple songs ago, and it was the title number, but I think we could give me another one.
Yeah, exactly. And so they did that. And I just...
And it's not even, like, it's fine dancing. It's Gene Kelly. Of course he does it well, but it's not. It's nothing spectacular.
Yeah, it's very high quality and it's good. And I think, like, all it does is it just dates the movie.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, there was loads of that, like, nonsense tacked on guff.
That and the beautiful girl fashion show are very, like...
I love that, though, because that's camp as... That is so camp.
It's camp and fun and not necessary.
Oh, it's completely unnecessary. Completely. That is so... That is... Oh, my God. Those women. I want to be one of those women. I don't know which one I would choose to be.
Well, monkey's fur adds a bit of drama.
It is that is high drag right there.
So we'll look for it in your mailboxes soon. The Jim and Tomic calendar where Jimmy and I pose as each of the girls in the beautiful girl segment and sing it in the rain.
I mean, if we ever get desperate for merch, we know what's coming. We know what's happening. And the songs, it's sweet.
The song's sweet. It's catchy. It's chauvinistic.
I think I've got it in a fake book somewhere.
It's a little creepy. You have the lips that were meant to be kissed, and you're over sweet 16. That's still a little young. That makes me uncomfortable.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Broadway rhythm, it's got me, everybody dance. Broadway rhythm, it's got me, everybody dance. Out on that gay white way, in each merry cafe, orchestras play, taking your breath away. Broadway rhythm, it's got me, everybody sing and dance.
Can we talk about voice dubbing?
That's the plot of the show, isn't it?
It's just my favorite thing in the world is like the actual voice dubbing that happened in this movie about voice dubbing. Do you know about this?
No, I didn't.
All or at least most of Debbie Reynolds' singing voice was dubbed, which is funny because she is the actress who supposedly is brought in to dub Lena Lamont in everything else. But so when you hear her singing in like Good Morning and a couple other numbers, it's what's her name? Betty Noyes' voice. But in some parts where Debbie Reynolds is quote unquote dubbing Gene Hagen, Lena Lamont, it's actually Gene Hagen's real, not Lena Lamont voice. And then Debbie Reynolds is just lip syncing.
Yeah. Like that blows my mind because now you have to sit and you have to think, okay, what were the execs thinking?
Yeah.
Like, I know what we'll do. We'll cast her. She can't sing, but that's okay. But she needs to sing for this person. Yeah. We'll get someone else who can sing for her. She can sing, but she's not allowed to sing. So we need to make sure that she can't sing. But we'll get her to sing it. Well, like, what the hell? Imagine that board meeting.
It's no more ridiculous than autotune. It's like a 50s version of autotune.
I guess. I mean, no, it's not. Wait, what?
It's like... In contemporary movie musicals, every actor has some form of digital enhancement. Yeah. Even in a lot of live shows, they have, you know, backstage auto-tuning or dubbing voices.
Well, the difference for this is that these women were never credited.
That's true.
You don't know any of this.
That's true. And it's a lot of it's still hearsay, too.
Exactly. Yeah, completely. Because I, like you say, I had never heard about Miss, what's her name? Betty Noyes.
Betty Noyes. Who
makes a lot of noise. I guess, like, the most famous one, and let's tip our hats to the now dearly departed Marnie Nixon, basically the queen of dubbing.
What did she do? Who did she dub?
So, most famously, she dubbed And I would say these are no secrets anymore. Like, I think everyone knows this. She's written a book. Anytime you get like the 100 greatest musicals, you find this fact out. But yeah, so she dubbed Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady. So Audrey Hepburn was obviously cast in My Fair Lady because she was a big name. She's a fantastic actress. Cute as a button. Perfect. That's what you want. Obviously not taking into account the fact that she's not the strongest singer. Now, let's give her some credit. She can sing a little bit. And there's a recording that we will put in the show notes of, you can hear her singing I Could Have Danced All Night. And I mean, she does a great job, but it's not an easy song. That role was written for Mary Martin. Mary Martin went into Peter Pan, so they gave it to Julie Andrews,
who did fabulously.
Yeah, exactly. She changed the game. That was just, yes.
But then in the long history of stage to movie snubs, they went with Miss Audrey Hepburn.
It's been happening since days of yore. Even Julie Andrews gets snubbed every once in a while. But I think the joke is like, Audrey Hepburn like called for them to cast Julie Andrews. She was like, surely this woman should be playing this role. Which I think, you know, makes me like respect Audrey Hepburn a lot. Because I'm like, that's a good gig that you're wanting to give up there because you're so scared about your voice. So to solve all of that, they decided to not tell Audrey Hepburn and then just get someone else to sing in her place, which is ridiculous. And completely uncredited. I think there's an interview that I've been trying to find. I can't find it anywhere. But I think Marnie Nixon says she got like $500.
Holy cow.
And that was it.
That's great, man.
And not like no royalties. Just, here's your fee. Thank you.
Hollywood
making
drama.
The movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently, yeah, Audrey Hepburn was a gem about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The person who was not a gem was Natalie Wood. Who can't sing.
No, she cannot.
There's not even any semblance of her being able to sing like Audrey Hepburn can. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in West Side Story, it kind of blows your mind. The same voice in West Side Story is the exact same voice in My Fair Lady. But yeah, Natalie Wood, but she kicked up a storm. Mm-hmm. Like, she was really mean and horrible to Marnie Nixon.
I hear that about Natalie Wood in general.
Just another reason why she shouldn't have been in that film.
Exactly. But, yeah. I want a series of all of these movies where Marnie Nixon dubs the voice until three quarters of the way through, and then Donald O'Connor shoves her to the side, and then he dubs the rest of the movie.
Exactly. Exactly. That should happen to all of them.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, and I'm happy again.
So my favorite part of this show is Make 'em Laugh and is Donald O'Connor. Bar none.
I mean, it is the best bit. There. Said
it's
it.
So good.
Historical musical theater moment. Right.
Musical
there.
Musical movie comedy, like, spot on, fabulous.
Should we talk about that song?
Would you call this plagiarism?
Completely. So out with the weird London cast recording that features this song.
Yeah.
I've never heard the original. Like, I've never been able to find it.
Be a Clown?
Yeah, like in like with from the 30s.
Oh, you got I'll put some links in the show notes. It's all over the place. Judy Garland used to sing it in duet in a tramp costume all the time. I'm sure I can find that video somewhere.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Hit me up.
It is not only the same, so the songs Be a Clown and Make 'em Laugh share very similar melodies. And really share very similar content.
When you say similar, you mean the same.
Basically the same. Yeah. And they're by different authors. It's important to point out. Be a Clown is by Cole Porter. And Make 'em Laugh is a new song by Arthur Freed for this movie. Quote unquote.
Yes. Brand new. Yeah. But again, like singing in her own trivia, the story goes that, you know, there wasn't a fuss kicked up because Freed, using all of his magical production powers, helped Cole Porter out by giving him the gig for writing the music for a movie called The Pirate, which we all know. I never heard of it. And so by doing him that favor, Cole Porter was like, yeah, have my song and please make it historically amazing and take all of the credit, please. I'm sure that's how it went down.
I mean, it's worth it. It's a great number.
I know. I'm not going to complain. Sorry,
it's Cole. A wonderful number. It's so, if you're going to watch one number from Singing in the Rain, watch Make 'Em Laugh.
Oh, 100%. And watch it again and again and again and again and again. Don't watch Matthew Morrison trying to do it.
Don't watch anyone else but Donald O'Connor.
Again, it's that kind of thing of, even though it's very old-timey.
Yeah, it's very vaudeville.
Yeah, but when you watch it now, I still side-split laugh. Like,
yeah,
it's amazing.
It's so funny.
It's the first time we had that little like circle run.
Yeah.
That Homer Simpson made famous.
Well, and like, what I find so impressive about it, if we saw that number in a movie that came out in 2016, it would be impressive, but maybe not as impressive, because you would assume there's CGI, or they're using wires, or they did it in 15 different takes, or there's stunt doubles. But this is Donald O'Connor running around on a soundstage, you know, no help, and making these feats of acrobatics happen.
One take.
Yeah. So the story goes.
Well, I don't. I think there were multiple takes, but like the end is all one shot. Is what I mean. One shot. That is so impressive. To remember all your cues.
Yeah.
Timing. Spot like marks. Holy moly.
Holy moly. It's crazy.
What a man.
Yeah.
What a man.
Gift to mankind.
Make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son, but be a comical one. They'll be standing in lines for those old honky-tonk monkey shines. Now you could study Shakespeare and be quite elite, and you could charm the critics and have nothing to eat. Just slip on a banana peel, the world's at your feet. Make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh.
They don't make them like they used to.
No, they don't.
Let's talk about that. Who do we have nowadays that you could be like, yeah, you could do that?
Like, legitimately a triple threat dancer, singer, actor?
Completely.
Not like this. I mean, we don't have our tap numbers anymore.
This is it. And even, like, in revivals and stuff, you'll get moments where people will jump in and they'll be all right. But the choreography's been reduced.
Mm-hmm.
It's been kind of dumbed down. Like, if we think about someone like, I say someone like Sutton, right? Who I think is probably one of the closest we've got.
For sure.
Even in Anything Goes, I know she dances for the whole dance break, but the choreography she's doing, it's not too difficult.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do think, to Broadway stage actors' credit, they're singing and dancing at the same time. And it's, you know, let's not pretend
very
for a
true
second that they were actually singing while they were dancing Good Morning or Make 'Em Laugh.
Very good point. Very good point. I don't care. No, that's true. I never really thought of that. But even if we look into the world of movie musicals,
yeah,
we get none of this.
No, it's
anymore.
It's like bleeding with talent, this whole movie. Like legitimate, actual, visceral performing talent.
And I'm trying to think, like, when did that stop? Was it the 70s?
That's the 60s and the 70s. It's, you know, whenever tap fell out of favor.
But that just makes no, because even like, it just makes no sense.
Yeah.
Because if you think, like, because obviously the 70s we still had Fosse.
Yeah.
And I guess it was kind of after him.
Yeah. But even,
there was nothing in the 80s.
You know, Fosse changed the choreography bent from being big and bold and brash to being tiny and reserved and intentional and quiet.
But then it was still also, I would say, still athletic. Because that's the thing is, I would call these guys athletes. And I would say that Fosse and Gwen and Anne Rankin and Ben Vereen, like, these guys were all athletes because it was so perfect. But again, you never really see that. Like, the one that I guess comes to mind is like Hairspray.
Yeah.
I feel like that's been the
Hairspray is very athletic, is very
dance extravaganza. But then it just doesn't feel the same.
Things don't feel like they have the same technical skill that Singing in the Rain does. You know, Hairspray is very good, and certainly To the Trained Eye is very technical and important, but it doesn't, you know, it looks like dance hall dance. It looks like, you know, you're dancing for fun, where like tap dance is like you are dancing on a dime.
Literally, if you're in 42nd Street. The pun free. It makes me sad because it's what I love. Like, one of my favorite shows that I've ever done was Anything Goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when I learned tap.
Yeah.
And it is just, you feel so proud because of what you're achieving.
Mm-hmm.
It feels amazing to perform those numbers.
Yeah.
And it's great fun to watch. I'm just like, I want it back.
Choreographers of the world, if you're listening, we need a tap dance renaissance. Make it happen. can I put this hypothetical story option in your hat?
Yeah, please do. You've told me briefly about this before, but I want to hear you spell it out.
Cosmo Brown, Donald O'Connor's character, is a gay character.
Bum, bum,
bum. And I think I've thought this long before I had gay and musical theater on my mind, but I like, if you want, and I was looking for it this time, the way Cosmo treats Lena when Lena is trying to muscle in on what is his turf with Don Lockwood, and like, they've been friends for the longest time, and the number of, like, even when Don says, like, Cosmo, you're my best friend, and he has these moments, which I'm sure I'm reading in, like, I'm sure this wasn't scripted specifically, but like, you're my closest friend, and he's like, oh, yes, friend, I am your closest friend, we are friends, we are two male friends who are just friends, and all we are friends. And like,
that's an exact quote from the film as well.
It's a Camden and Green original. It's, you know, and you couldn't, it's as close as you could get to writing a gay character without writing it in the 50s. You couldn't have a gay character, an out gay character, and an overt gay character at all. Cosmo Brown is a gay character.
I saw a really good YouTube series recently all about this. I can't remember who did it.
Yeah. Someone should Google it, probably.
It was something like musical theater is so gay. That's what it was.
Gay.
Musical theater is so gay.
Or if you'd like, hashtag humblebrag, at least right now, if you type just the words musical theater into YouTube, it's like the third result. Moving up in the world. But yeah, coded gay characters in musical theater. Once you start looking out for them, they're all over the place.
Completely. Well, I mean, we've talked about it before, Natasha Pierre, Great Comedy 1912. I swear, Dolokhov is a gay man, and he is fully in love with Anatol. They are. You're right, though. They are everywhere. And
yeah,
I think you make the really good point in your video when you talk about composers like Cole Porter, who are writing these lyrics that literally are saying gay, 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 gay.
Right.
And it's that way for them to be like, I exist and you wouldn't have this form without me. But then what I wonder about this is there's no gay production team, lesbian production. You know what I mean? There's no, everyone involved is straight.
As far as we know. Yeah, I think both Donald and Gene Kelly have sorted histories.
Really?
I think there have at least been rumors. Hollywood in the 50s. Everyone was gay in Hollywood in the 50s, or everyone was at least flexible in Hollywood in the 50s.
Okay. Interesting. I would never have thought that from Gene Kelly, though.
Because he emits this masculinity.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Fred Astaire, I'll give you.
See,
but then, he's so wholesome.
I would totally go the other way. I would call Fred Astaire straighter than Gene Kelly.
I don't know. He's so straight, Gene Kelly. But Donald O'Connor, yeah. I can give you. But then, is that just because of Cosmo?
It could be. Maybe, you know, he's doing the great actor. I know he's, I think he's been married a couple times to women. I should specify.
I mean, I look at like Cosmo in that film, and I'm like, I feel you, buddy. I feel you. I've been there. I've had those straight friends, and I've been like, yeah, I'll do anything for you. Yeah, of course. I don't mind staying up till 3 a.m.
Follow you to the end of the world.
Yeah, completely. Like, your heart bleeds for Donald O'Connor in that film, because he also, you know, he gets a happy-ish ending.
Kind of.
His best friend gets the girl.
And he's like, oh,
that's what you want.
Yay!
even RF gets his money, but poor little Cosmo just sits there. And I think you're right, like, the relationship that he has with Lena Lamont is, again, I've had that relationship with
him. I mean, I think
with overpowering diva
of people in the movie, Cosmo Brown hates Lena Lamont more than anyone else. He has more lines against her, more sarcastic quips about her than anyone else in this whole show.
Completely. And also the relationship that he has with Debbie Reynolds is really platonic.
Yeah.
Not in the sense of, oh, I know you're interested in my best friend, so I'm not going to go there. It is literally like a buddy relationship.
Yep.
But with a female. And that doesn't happen in those days. Do you know what I mean?
Nope. In our chauvinistic hat-wearing time.
Yeah, exactly. I think that makes it very, very apparent. And also, Gene Kelly's wearing fabulous eyeshadow, so who could resist, you know? He's getting the mixed signals. That's what it is.
All I do is dream of you the whole night through. With the dawn, I still go on dreaming of you. You're every thought, you're everything, you're every song I ever sing. Summer, winter, autumn, and spring. And were there more than 24 hours a day, they'd be spent in sweet content dreaming away. Skies are gray, skies are blue, morning, noon, and night, night true. All I do the whole day through is dream of you.
So this is coming to Broadway soon. This was news to me. I didn't know this at all.
So the production has come from France.
Okay.
I can't pronounce the name of the company that did it. It's something like Théâtre du Châtelet. I don't know if that's right. Thank you. Paris, France.
Do you think they're trying to do the same thing they did with An American in Paris?
Yeah, it's the exact same company. Exact same thing.
I bet you they're trying to do the exact same thing they did with American in Paris.
You couldn't get more similar.
A big old dance show.
Yeah, I mean, like, written by the Freed Unit that was turned into a musical, you know what I mean? It's just almost as a revival, I guess. Yeah, so it's coming. It looks really good. It looks a lot better than the kind of recent Chichester one that we had in London. That did quite well, and it was all right.
Yeah, is that the one that was on that Royal Variety performance that I've seen on YouTube?
Uh-huh.
I have seen that. It was umbrellas. Fine.
Yeah. The Chichester is known for churning out fantastic productions.
Yeah.
In terms of design. Like, so they did the recent Gypsy.
Okay. Yes. Which is fabulous.
Yeah. The design is exemplary. They did the recent Sweeney Todd with Imelda and Michael Ball. They've just done an amazing production of Barnum.
Okay.
And they're going to do Half a Sixpence, which I know is your favorite musical. So there's lots of things. There's lots of really, really great things that they're churning out. I don't think Singing in the Rain was their best.
Yeah.
But they had a run on the West End for a good while, like a really good while. Really successful tour. But the looks of it, this production from Théâtre du Châtelet, who knows, looks better.
The stuff they did with An American in Paris was just stunning. It was so beautiful and, like, it was just a joy to watch.
Completely. The choreography. In fact, I know I've just talked about how they don't make it like they used to, but to be honest, in that show, the choreography was sensational.
Yeah,
like,
it's true.
The performance that they did on the Tonys was moving. So have you looked up any pictures of anything from it?
So I'm watching a compilation video right now, and it looks really cool. It's all in this, like, black and white kind of...
It's all in black and white. Yeah, the whole really thing. Cool. The whole thing, apart from Broadway...
Of course, which would be just vomiting Technicolor.
Exactly. I think as a design, it looks really, really cool. Some nice moments. But I think it totally covers what we said earlier.
Yeah.
It looks exactly like the movie on stage.
Yep. And that's what I think that's what you do with this kind
frame
of show.
Frame by frame, scene by scene. And I suppose, why change it?
It's perfect. It really is, despite, you know, the stupidness of Broadway Rhythm and some of the stupidness of, like, the fashion show sort of stuff. It's just so well constructed in its tiny moments, and it's just fun. It's just fun to watch and experience.
I think it flows really well.
Yeah.
And again, it's the name, Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
Everyone wants to see it.
Be like, oh, I know that movie. Well, we're from Oklahoma. Let's go see Singing in the Rain, honey, dear. Whoa, I'll go to the TKTS booth.
I know that
Gene
Kelly guy. Yeah. I'm sorry, that was really offensive to Midwestern America. The thing that annoys me about the musical is it's like, come and see how we do Rain on stage.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that they're ever focusing on.
Yeah.
Or getting people in. Now, I'm like, it's literally the 21st century,
right?
You can, like, have 3D holograms on stage now.
I know of high schools that have done Rain on stage. Like, it's not...
My uni amateur company did a production of Island Theatre, and they had a freaking waterfall running for the whole show. Like, we get it.
Yeah.
You could do it. Now, that isn't to say that I don't love Rain on stage and Water on stage, but I think trying to use that, excuse me, as your selling point...
As a marketing gimmick.
Nowadays, silly. I think silly. Water on stage does this weird thing to me. It makes me feel amazing. It makes me feel so good. I don't know that it's because it's not supposed to be there,
uh-huh.
but it's really, really great. I remember I saw this amazing production of Midsummer Night's Dream, where basically they had the whole Athenian scene at the start, and then Philostrate started stripping, and we're like, hey, what's going on here? And then he just like falls to the side and falls into the stage with this massive splash, and there was just this hidden pool.
Ooh.
Right? And then it all starts, the whole stage just starts raining.
That's very cool.
And then that was the fairy world. It was really, really good. And it's always been my ambition to have a show
where it rains on stage
with rain in it.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart, and I'm red.
You hate him. You hate him so much.
I really don't like Gene Kelly.
That's so interesting.
I enjoy some, like, I appreciate his talent and his technical prowess. I think some of his directorial stuff is great. I love what he did with Hello Dolly. I think as a person, he was a part of and set a precedent for directorial behavior that has been detrimental and that Hollywood is still feeling the repercussions of today.
Do you think he started it? Do you think he started bad directing?
I don't think he started that kind of, like, overwhelming chauvinistic, like, oppressive directing. Certainly Alfred Hitchcock was much worse than Gene Kelly, just to pluck an example out of the air.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, like, Jerome Robbins, like, he was mean. Like, he like, persecuted the cast of West Side Story.
I will not suffer directors like that. I will call them out on that bullshit, because I don't think that's necessary. I don't think it was necessary then, and it's certainly not necessary now. And the fact that it became the norm in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s is a destructive presence that we are still trying to break down as a culture. You know,
It is true that we are, like, trying to break it down. Because I've been reading a few books and things about directing, and particularly directing a musical theater. And the, like, literally every single book has a paragraph being like, yes, we know Jerome Robbins was really good and he got good results, but please don't do it like that. Like,
right.
Every single book I read, even if it's completely unrelated.
And, like, I think it is important to continue to call those things out, to never hand wave them away, because we've been hand waving them away for decades. And, you know, it's 2016.
Completely.
It's time to...
And as... Do you know what? Like, it does annoy me, because as a director, it does annoy me when people think that you have to be a dick to get the job done.
No.
And so, like, new directors come in and they kind of put on this persona. And I'm like, just please stop. Like, please stop, because it's going to take you twice as long to get something out of your actor. It's going to take you twice as long to get your actors to trust you. Sure, you may gain their respect quite quickly, but just because they're scared of you, like, that's not how it should be. I see so many new directors trying to put on this mean persona. I say stop, new directors.
It's just unnecessary. It's just unnecessary. We're all professionals trying to get the same thing done. There's no reason to play games.
Yeah. Have you ever, in your land of tech, have you ever had to work with any evil demon directors?
All the time. College. My apologies to theatrical college professors out there. And some college professors I've had have been fabulous. But one of the things I've noticed about a lot of theatrical education professionals, both at the college level and the high school level, is that education is their plan B. They wanted to do whatever it is they do professionally, and this is their backup plan. And because it's their backup plan, they go into it with, like, a repressed sense of hatred towards these, you know, young, aspiring professionals that comes out in their direction. You know, of course, directing professors have a proclivity for the egomaniacal, for the controlling. It is a no-brainer. And then that's all the more reason to be self-aware about it.
Completely. You
know, I had an acting professor in college, because I acted a little bit in college, and it was like acting too, I think. And I had completed some... It was The Glass Menagerie. Do you know how many times I've had to do scenes from The Glass Menagerie?
Gosh.
Stop using scenes from The Glass Menagerie. like, a scene I had done in high school in acting classes, doing it again in college, and finish the scene, and the acting teacher, who was a directing professor, is sitting in the front of the class and turns to one of my classmates to the left and goes, "Did you believe it?" And then turns to a classmate on the other side and goes, "Did you believe it?" And then looks at me and goes, "I didn't believe it." And I'm like, okay, that's fine, but there are more constructive ways to communicate that piece of feedback. There are ways that aren't going to be so mean. Just so mean.
It's just mean. It's just mean. Like, you're never going to get anything from that. There is no actor who could take that note and be like, "Ah, okay, I'm inspired by that. See that mocking that you just did of
me? We're in a classroom.
Great, I'm ready to go do it now."
Yeah. Can you imagine a math teacher writing on top of like a kid who got a C on the quizzes test being like, "You suck at math." Like, no.
Exactly.
You write, "Try better next time," or "Come see me so we can figure this out." Like,
completely.
Bothers me so much. So it is why I will not suffer some of Gene Kelly's antics.
Fair enough. I still fancy him, but that's like,
have you ever suffered that horrible thing of having your hostess ask you to sing, and just because you're so polite, you mumble through your teeth, "All right," and suddenly a deathly gloom descends upon the entire room, and the whispering gallery starts to ring with, "Hold your hats, she's gonna sing." Well, here I am with great regret, an innocent victim of etiquette. I'm going to sing, but not for long. And though it's old, it's a lovely song. I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again.
I was singing in the rain.
It was. I feel all dry now.
Yeah, I'm soaked.
Don't you?
Soaked to the core. Probably going to be wet for the rest of my life. Jimmy, we have a quiz question for the topic of next week's show.
Okay.
You ready?
Can you tell me what it is?
I'm
ready.
The source material for this musical was quite controversial, and talks of censorship made it into the American political discourse. In one censorship hearing, a politician criticized the censorship attempt, saying, quote, "Are we going to start attacking ABC for scandal? I mean, where does this stop?" End quote.
Sassy politician.
I know. What show could that be?
I love it. I have no idea. That's all very political and exciting. It's almost as good as our trivia question for this week.
I think it's better than our trivia question for this week.
Ever so slightly. Because it's actual trivia. Anyway, if you could pop along to our iTunes, it would help us out so, so much if you could give us a little review.
Yeah.
Say some happy things about the podcast.
Or some sad things.
I mean, guess sometimes. Thank you as well to the people who have already left a review.
You're lovely people.
I know everyone always says this, but it would actually help us.
It actually does help us a whole lot.
Yeah.
If you want to get in contact with us, I'm Tommy. I'm on @MusicalMash on Twitter, or you can find me at Musical Theater Mash on YouTube.
And I am also on Twitter, @@Hendrix, the spelling of my name. People get very confused by that. I'm also on YouTube. I don't make that much, but I will.
Or we have a show Twitter that's @JimAndTomic on Twitter.
Or you can go onto our website, jimandtomic.com. And also, you'll be able to get a link to our Reddit discussion.
Yeah, we want to talk with you.
Yeah, exactly. We have some great chats over there. Every week, every podcast, there's some really exciting discussions. And it's so interesting hearing your opinions and your experiences of the show in greater than 140 characters. So, yeah, come and speak to us over there.
Absolutely. And tell your friends. You know this great musical theater podcast they should listen to.
We want this basically to be playing at Musical Mondays.
Every Monday.
In your bars across the world. That they switch this on.
Global domination as a goal.
That's the aim, you know? It's fine. It's gonna happen. And I guess we'll see you next Wednesday.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.
D- Do you believe the whole thing about the milk?
Putting milk in the water? No, I think that's one of those made-up trivia things.
Yeah, exactly. What about the whole thing about him being ill?
I also think that's one of those made-up trivia things.
That's the one, though, that I'm not sure if it is, because everyone says that.
Yeah. A lot
that's
of people.
That's everywhere.
Do you know how many people believe in Bigfoot? Like...
me?
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.